What is it called?
Tonic water. You know,
tonic water. Okay, we'll try it. And I need something like a tea for my stomach. Okay, so we're going to now pick up the sugya of Erev Parshios. So let's see if we can determine where we're up to. We did the Mishnah, so that takes us by definition to Daf Beis Amid Beis. And we started the Gemara on Daf Beis Amid Beis. So let's just summarize the highlights of yesterday's shiur, so we'll be able to pick it up today. And in a minute, if you're patient, I'll tell you exactly where we're up to. Oh, thank you so much.
It's very hot.
All right, I need something. Great. The Gemara wants to know about the structure of the Mishnah. The opening line in the Mishnah is very odd. The Mishnah speaks about Dine Momenos, and then it goes on to speak about Gzelos V'Chavolos. And it would seem that Gzelos V'Chavolos are simply cases, specific cases of Dine Momenos. So once you've given me the general rule that in all Dine Momenos we need three judges, and nothing less than three will do, then I already have included in that Gzelos V'Chavolos. So if I'm suing you for theft, or for assault, then those are certainly monetary lawsuits, and they require a Beis Din of three. Why divide up the Mishnah in a way that indicates that, in general, monetary law requires three judges, and then specifically in claims of theft or assault, you require three judges? Why make a general statement that's all-inclusive, and then go ahead and make a more specific statement, and both statements are identical, namely the requirement of three judges? So you're telling me that you require three judges in monetary law. Okay, I know therefore that if I'm suing someone for damages in the case of Chavola, or for theft in the case of Gzela, since these are monetary cases, they come under Dini Mominus, you require three judges. So the Mishnah is very choppy over here. And what we learned yesterday was Rabbi Avo says that what the Mishnah is trying to do is what we call a miut. Miut means an exclusion. The Mishnah is telling us that it's not true that Dini Momenos in general, all inclusive, every single branch, every single subcategory of Dini Momenos requires three. There are only two cases within the constellation of Dini Momenos that require three judges, and they are Gzelos V'Chavolos. And the Gemara basically goes on to say that according to the way Rabbi Avo reads that Mishnah, today we're going to, in Mirza Hashem, learn an alternative to Rabbi Avo, but in his reading of the Mishnah, Dine Momenos Pishlosha, and then the Mishnah says, well, which Dine Momenos are Pishlosha? Don't make the mistake that all Dine Momenos are Pishlosha, only the following cases of Dine Momenos are Pishlosha, and those are the cases of Gzelos V'Chavolos. And what Rabbi Avo basically does is he adds two words to the Mishnah. Mahen, those two words. What are Dine Momenos? Zelus V'Chavolos. In other words, which Dine Momenos require three judges? So for example, if I were to sue you for a debt, which would not be theft, nor would it be assault. Let's say, for example, I claim I lent you $1,000 and you didn't return the money. In such a case, would I require three judges? The answer is no. Why? Because we're applying the miut rule of Rabbi Avo, that which Dini Momenos requires Shlosha? Mahen, what are the cases of Dini Momenos that require Shlosha? And those are the cases of Gzelos V'Chavolos. And it's interesting, the reason for this is because when the Torah repeats the word Elohim three times, from which we derive three judges, the Torah is addressing the case of a shomer who is watching something and then decides to steal it. He wants to take it for himself. So that's a case of gzela. Gzela meaning it's not that he's denying a debt that he has to pay, but rather he's absconding, he's taking for himself a material physical object. Remember, we called it a be'en, and that's called gzela. In that context, the Torah repeats the word Elohim three times, hence we require three judges. But in a case where I'm just suing you for a debt, I'm not claiming that you stole some physical object from me, that's not gzela, that's called Hodos and Halvos, as we'll soon see, those cases do not require three judges. And the Gemara goes on to flesh this out and explain Rabbi Avo to the T. If it would have just said Dini Momenos Bishlosha, we would have thought all Dini Momenos Bishlosha. If it would have just said Gzeilus v'chavolus b'shlosha, we would have thought that Gzeilus v'chavolus is just an example of all dini mamonos, but it really means Gzeilus v'chavolus, etc. And why would the Mishnah have chosen Gzeilus v'chavolus out of the whole gamut, the whole constellation of dini mamonos? Because in the context of Gzeilus v'chavolus, the Torah requires three judges. So since it's explicit that we require three judges in the case of Gzeilus v'chavolus, therefore the Mishnah is going to mention Gzeilus v'chavolus. But really it means etc., including all dini mamonos. So how did the Mishnah convey the message that only Gzeilus v'chavolus, where the Torah explicitly requires three judges, require three judges, but in other cases, like hodos v'alvos, the general dini mamonos, where you didn't steal an object, did not require three judges? What the Mishnah did was, it said the following, dini mamonos b'shlosha. Yeah, but which dini mamonos b'shlosha? Mahen, which are the dini mamonos that require shlosha? Gzeilus v'chavolus, meaning gzeilus v'chavolus in, and hodos v'alvos lo. Gzeilus v'chavolus do require three judges, but hodos v'alvos do not require three judges. And the reason why only gzeilus v'chavolus require three judges is because only in the parasha of gzeila did the Torah repeat the word Elohim three times, and hence teach us that we need three judges, and no less than three judges would do. But in other dini mamonos, which are not included in that parasha, we do not require three judges. Now, the Gemara asks a side question here. Okay, the parasha of Gzeila includes the word Elohim three times, but what about Chavolos? Chavolos, where I assault somebody, that's not called Gzeila. I didn't steal anything for you. So the Gemara says, Mali Chovel Begufo, Mali Chovel Bemamono. It doesn't matter whether I take your money or I take your body, a limb off your body. In both cases, I'm causing you a loss by taking something away from you. So either I took a sheep or a beged, you know, some sort of cloth or whatever I took from you, a diamond ring, or I took a limb from your body and injured your body. In all cases, I am taking away something from you, and therefore, when the Torah addresses gzeila, it includes chavala as well. So that's a set, you know, an indivisible set. Gzeilus v'chavolus, it's like a hyphenated set. However, other cases where I'm not taking something away from you, namely a case of a debt or a loan, then in those cases, since the Torah doesn't require three judges, it nowhere says that in the cases of hodos, v'alvos, Elohim, 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 you require three judges, then you don't need three judges. And this is where we got up to yesterday, and now we're up to Ulamai. So let's just try to find the place on Daf Beis Amud Beis, and we're looking for the word Ulamai. Let's see if we can figure out how we can all be on the same place of Ulamai. Does anybody have a Simon Ledover? You know, how many? Let's say count how many lines down here. Just 1 second. Ulamai. I think the best way is to count it from the bottom of the page. Again, Mitch is not going to help you, I don't think, but you'll find it. So we're going to count from the bottom of the page. One, we're going up from the bottom of the page on Beis Amud Beis. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So if you count 11 lines up from the bottom of page Beis Amud Beis, you'll see the line starts with the word Ulamai. Okay? Now, this sugya Ulamai, which we'll explain as we go along, is kind of a sugya within a sugya. What I mean to say is, there's the general sugya, we'll give it a title, and then there's a little bit of a branch or a more specific question, again, a very fundamental issue, but that should be seen in a broader context. So what's the broader context of the sugya? And the answer to that question is whether or not we should take the concept of dini mamonos and we should view it as an all-inclusive umbrella organization, or should we break it down into two distinct groups? And those groups are A, which is called Gzeilos v'chavolos, B, which is called Hodos v'alvos. Should we make a wedge, a barrier, and split between those two branches and say that they don't overlap and they're distinct and they are determined by their own rules and regulations that are unique to them, and we shouldn't cross, you know, cross political lines over here, or no, or should we say that Dini Mominis is one entity? Okay, now within that sugya, we have a more specific, we hone into a more specific issue, and that is what is the makeup of a Beis Din? We can talk about two different issues. We can talk about what I call quality and what I call quantity. Quantity means how many judges are necessary to make up a Beis Din. That's called a quantitative question. A quantitative question, right? In Hebrew it's called kamus. Then we have a qualitative question. And that is, what is the status or the level of scholarship of these judges? Now we're talking about the resume. Each judge, if he wants to apply for the position as a judge, he has to hand in his resume. And the question is he a mumche? Is he an expert? Has he been recognized and ordained as such, which is called smicha? Or maybe he knows the law, but he doesn't have those qualifications of expertise, and he never received smicha. He's not what you call, the technical language of the Gemara, a mumche. And that's a question of the quality of the judge. Now we have to ask a different question, the quantitative question. Quantity means how many judges make up a Beis Din. So here's the sugya within the sugya. If we're going to say, according to one approach, that we take Dini Mominis and we divide it into two, the window's open?
No.
Oh, okay. I was wondering if it's so hot that I can't even tell if the window is open. So maybe we'll get some more air here. Okay? So Rabosai, at this point what we're doing is we're taking Dini Mominis as a general term and we're splitting it into two. Again, this is not universally accepted, but this is certainly one approach. So Dini Mominos now has to break down into two distinct categories that shouldn't be compared and shouldn't be overlapped. One is called Xelos, who can help me, Vecha Volos, and the other is called Halvaos Vehodos. Okay? So in this particular view, there's a barrier in between us. Do you follow what I mean? This is the mechitza that wedges between the two, and there's no overlap. Don't cross paths. You know, there's no, you know, you can't vote for an independent party. Either vote Republican or Democrat. Those are your two options. Okay. Now, the Torah in the parsha of Gzela says Elo him three times, right? What does that teach me?
Three judges. You said three.
It teaches me A, three judges.
That are experts.
Okay. Okay, that's what I call a qualitative question. A quantitative question. The quantity of judges. And B, what's the quality?
Well, Elohim.
Right? It's mumchim. Right? Because the word Elohim means mumchim. Now, we're going according to the barrier opinion. So there's a barrier between here and here. If that be the case, and we don't derive any conclusions whatsoever from here to here, meaning from Xelos, we can't teach us anything about Alvos, because they're two separate sections in the Torah. They shouldn't be overlapped, they shouldn't be confused. Then we're going to come to a very interesting conclusion. That not only do we not require, pardon the double negative, not only do we not require mumchim, but we don't even require three judges. And that's what the Gemara is going to ask at this point. Ulamai. Ulamai means, to what extent is the Mishnah using this approach called the miut approach, right, that we discussed in Rabbi Avo, and telling us that the law of Dini Mominis only applies to Xelos Vechavos, but not to Hodos and Olvos. Ilema, if we should take it to its logical conclusion, to Lobin and Shlosha, we don't even need three judges. then we're in trouble. Because if we take it to its logical conclusion, then we have a contradiction in Rabbi Avo. Because the same Rabbi Avo that separates between Zelos on the one hand and Alvos on the other hand is the same Rabbi Avo who takes the position, he's committed, that Shnayim Shadonu Dinei Momus L'Divrei HaKol Ein Dinei Din, that if there were less than three judges, so two judges handed down a decision in a monetary case, everybody agrees, so claims Rabbi Avo, on this is Sugyat Avo, that it's not Din. Again, it might work under a different law. That's called arbitration. We had a long discussion about that yesterday. That's called pshara. We're not talking about pshara. Pshara is not din. Pshara is a way of circumventing din. But if we're talking about din, then you require no less than three judges. And if two judges sat down and they ruled on a monetary case, it's totally invalid. Ein dinehem din. So wait a second. We're in a funny situation here. Why? Because we're saying that when the Mishnah went out of its way to say Gzeilus v'chavolos v'shlosh, it's coming to the exclusion of halvolos v'odos, that would imply that the two are separate sectors in the Torah without any overlap whatsoever, and therefore we should come to the conclusion that with regard to halvolos and odos, there's no requirement of three judges. Well, if that's what the Mishnah is telling me, that there's no requirement of three judges, then why does Rabbi Avo say that this is not a valid din unless there were three judges? Ella, but rather you have to say that the Mishnah's mute is only a partial mute. It's a halfway measure. And it tells you to lo be'inon mumchim, that the difference between Gzelos on the one hand and Hodos and Alvos on the other hand is whether you require mumchen. That's a qualitative question about the status of the chachma, the knowledge, the expertise of the judges, but has no bearing on the number of judges, right? The quantity question of how many judges are required to make up a bezdin. So it comes out like this according to the Gemara. Rabbi Avo must be saying that the miut in our Mishnah of the Mahen is coming to tell you that the three judges of Gzelos v'Chavolos are mumchim, but the three judges of Hodos v'Alvos are not mumchim. So it means the following. Dini Mamres v'Shlosha. And that's referring to Hodos and Alvos. What does that Shlosha mean? Dini Mamres v'Shlosha. Dini Mamres v'Shlosha means that in general, Dini Mamonis, you require three, but you don't require Mumchim. Then the Mishnah goes on to say, but if you're going to tell me that you want to require Mumchim, that's only with regard to Gzelos v'Halvos. Gzelos v'Odos. Halvos and Odos. So on both sides, it comes out like this. We're about to embark on the sugya of Erev Parshiyos. That whole sugya is going to analyze the question of halva. Does when it says in Kesef Talvez Tami, we saw the psukim yesterday inside, is that an extension of the previous parasha of Gzela? And therefore all the laws of Gzela that the Torah formulates in that parasha, that was in psukim Zion and Ches, they all apply to Sukkim, what was it, Yudbeis, Chavdalid, in the parasha of Halva. Now what we're going to say is the following, and it's getting a little sticky. We're going to say the following, that as far as the basic requirement of three judges, that's a requirement that we derive from Gzela and apply to Hodos and Alvos. But as far as the requirement of three Mumchim, that requirement is specifically limited to the cases of Gzelos and Chavolos and doesn't apply to the case of Hodos Falvos. That's already a sticky kind of position. You know, we like things to be either black or white. Now they're gray. You know, to some extent, these two parshios are connected and they go hand in hand. Hence, in all these cases of monetary law, we require three judges and no less. But on the other hand, they part ways when we get to the question of Mumchim. And Gzelos and Chavolos require Mumchim, and Hodos v'Alvos did not require Mumchim. That seems to be the direction of this Gemara. So the miut now, in which we're excluding the overlap, is with regard to the requirement of Mumchim. And at this point, we enter into the sugya of Eruv Parshim. So the Gemara says the following. Ma'ikas Sofar. So according to Rabbi Avo, what is the position of the Tana of our Mishnah? If he's of the opinion that whatever it says in the parash of Gzela, which is the parash of Shomrim, remember the Shomer is accused of absconding with the object that was given to him, that was deposited in the custodian's possession, that's called Gzela. And there the Torah says, Elohim, 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 that we require three judges, is Liboyin Ami Mumchim. If you're allowed to apply the principle of Erev Parshios Ksivkan, we're going to take those laws that are formulated in the Parsha of Shomrim and we're going to extend them to the Parsha of Halvah, then we should require Mumchim as well. V'ikasavar ein Erev Parshios Ksivkan. If on the other hand, we're not allowed to cross the boundary, right, no political crossovers here, and that which it says in the Parsha of Shomrim is only applicable to the Parsha of Shomrim and does not apply to the Parsha of Halvos, is Shlosha Lomeli. Why does Rabbi Avo say that if there are only two judges on the court? You know, both these laws are written in the same pasuk. Law number one, as we put on the board, of three judges. Law number two, that these judges have to reach the level of Mumchim. They're both recorded in the Parsha of Gzelos, the Parsha of Shomrim. And now the issue is, can we cross over and derive and extend this to the Parsha of Halva im kesef talvis ami? That depends on whether you hold Erev Parshios or you reject Erev Parshios. But to come up with this split and say, well, you know what? We're going to accept the principle of Erev Parshios, and therefore we're going to require three judges in all monetary cases, including Halvos. But on the other hand, we're not going to accept this Erev Parshios as far as the level of the judge, meaning that he has to be a mumcha. That's not a consistent view. It's either or. Either you accept Erev Parshios or reject Erev Parshios. Either you derive Halva from Gzelo or you don't derive Halva from Gzelo. If you don't, then you shouldn't require three judges. And we saw Rabbi Halva requires three judges even in the case of Halva. And if on the other hand, you are going to apply the principle of Erev Parshios, then why did the Mishnah apply this Miut rule to tell me that in Alvos you don't require three Mumchim, we should require three Mumchim? You can't have your cake and eat it. You can't take the position that, yes, we will derive the requirement of three judges in Alvos, meaning we will accept the principle of Erev Parshios, and then turn around and say, no, we will not derive the conclusion that these three judges have to be Mumchim because we reject Erev Parshios. Either you accept Erev Parshios or you reject Erev Parshios. Says the Gemara, this is the new Gemara for today, Li olam kasavar Erev Parshios Ksivkan, which means that in all monetary cases we require not only three judges, but they have to be mumchim. Ubidin. Bidin means according to the strict letter of the law, who? The law would require Dilibai Nami Mumchim. So we need Dayanim Mumchim even in the cases of Alvos. Why? Because we're holding what? Everybody. Erev Parshios Ksivkan. Can we get that together? 1, 2, 3. Erev Parshios Ksivkan. And whenever I have that choir, it means I want you to remember this for the rest of your life. Ubedinu Dilibai Nami Mumchim. V'hai delo mi boy mumchin mishum de Rabbi Chanina. Now this is amazing what we're about to learn. We're about to learn that the Chachamim could make a takana, and in that takana they can enact a validation of judges and court cases which the Torah would not recognize. Do you hear what I'm saying, Rabbi Osai? The Torah says we require X, and the Rabbanan are going to drop the requirement of X. Now, with regard to three judges, that number, that minimum number, the Rabbanan, that's untouchable. The Rabbanan are not going to touch that. They certainly require three judges, as we saw. Rabbi Avos says if there were only two judges, there's no din. But as far as the requirement of mumchim, here the Rabbanan take off their gloves and they say, you know what? We're going to rely on a decision of a Bez made up of three judges, despite the fact that these judges are not what? They're not mumchim. Where do we see, the Gemara asks, some sort of precedent that the Rabbanon could drop the requirements of the Torah as far as judgment are concerned? And this we find our precedent is in Rabbi Chanina. Okay, now Rabbi Chanina is talking about Edim. In order for any Bezdin to issue a ruling, a verdict, they need witnesses. And the Torah has very high standards and demands in order to have these witnesses give a testimony that qualifies and is valid. And the highest requirement, which the Torah requires, and it's going to be derived from Psukim, is what's called Drisha V'Chakira. Drisha V'Chakira means investigations, interrogations. We're going to interrogate the witnesses. And we're going to interrogate them until they're blue in the face, until we finally find some sort of contradiction in them. I'm exaggerating, but you follow my point. The requirements of Drisha V'Chakira are very stiff. In Chakiros, the Gemara says elsewhere in the Masechet Sanhedrin that there are going to be seven Chakiros. Seven different questions that absolutely the Eidim are required to give answers to all these seven questions. Then there's something called Drishos. Drishos are already more specific, embellishing questions, which if the Eidim say we don't know, we can still accept them, but if they contradict me. So for example, what color was the shirt that was worn by the so-called accused murderer? Was it a white shirt? Was it a blue shirt? Was it a yellow shirt? Again, we don't want to talk about blue and white today because that's a political party, so we don't want to get political. But what was the color of the shirt he was wearing? That's called a drisha. So if one eight says it was blue and the other eight says it was red, then we throw out the eidim. If, on the other hand, they both say we don't know, or one says he does know, the other says he doesn't know, there's no contradiction, then in the case of drisha, we can accept them. But in the case of chakira, if one of the eidim cannot answer any of the seven chakiras, that's it. He doesn't qualify. We have to throw out the Eidus. And all these requirements are required by the Torah law, and they required not only in the most extreme cases, which are capital cases, that's called Dini Nefashos, but they also are requirements in Dine Mamonos, in monetary cases. Now imagine the following. Let's say you are Reuven. Okay, can anybody here imagine himself being Reuven? Reuven's always a good name, right, in my... And you have some bucks. Shimon Nebuch doesn't have bucks. So Shimon comes to you for a loan. Yeah, he gives you a whole song and dance. He has a great enterprise, a business opportunity. He can invest. You know, they're telling him that real estate in Passaic is going up by the moment. You know, he wants to invest in a property there. Or down in Florida, everyone's retiring, going down to Florida. So again, you can't get anything in Century Village where I was a scholar resident, but you can go to the next town over, north, that's called Boynton, and if you can't get anything in Boynton, you keep going north until you get to Palm Beach, and then it keeps going on and on. So I have a great investment. So Shimon comes along and says to Reuven, lend me some money. Now, the Torah says that if you have the money to lend, that's a great mitzvah, to lend money. But on the other hand, you, Reuven, don't want to lose your money. So you want certain guarantees that you'll get back your money. And if you have those guarantees, then you'll be more comfortable and you'll be less inhibited about extending a loan. And this is Rabbi Hanina's problem. The reason why you're very inhibited is because you're always afraid that Shimon will deny the claim and he'll get off the hook. So you need guarantees, correct? You need some ironclad evidence that Shimon will not be able to deny in a court in event, heaven forbid, that he denies the claim. So what do? You invite two witnesses. And these witnesses are going to testify that you, Reuven, extended a loan of 1,000 rubles to Shimon. There's only one problem. Bezdin is going to make mincemeat out of these two witnesses with drishos and chakiris until they finally come to the conclusion that there's some nuance, a hair's breadth of discrepancy between the two tales that are being told there by each of the witnesses respectively. And therefore, Reuven says, you know what? I don't feel very comfortable about putting my money on the line. And that's called, in the language of the Gemara, if anybody knows this, Ne'ilas Delis. Okay? What is Ne'ilas Delis? For those of you who like to take notes, it's worthwhile writing this down. the love is the person who needs money. He's down and out. The Torah has to create a framework, an atmosphere, an ambiance in which the lover will be able to get money when he needs the money. But the mal is very inhibited. He's afraid to lose his money. And in that case, unless we calm down the malver and we convince him that he has securities and he'll get back his money, we're going to be ending up in a situation of ne'ilas delts, which means the doors are locked. Nevuch, this lover who has the opportunity of investing and he doesn't have the cash, he doesn't have the currency to invest, he won't have the ability to get a loan because the malver is inhibited. He's afraid to extend that loan. So what we want to do is we want to bend over backwards to make it easier for the malva to have these guarantees. Again, whose benefit are we out for at the end of the day? The lowest benefit, right? Again, it's a paradoxical situation. We're going to make it easier for the malva to get back his money, but we're doing so for the sake of the lowa, because otherwise the malva is not going to extend the loan to the lowa. So that's called the ilist. Comes along Rabbi Hanin, and he says the following. We're going to drop the requirement of drisha v'chakir. We're going to convince and calm down the malva that he has these two witnesses. They were there at the time of the alva. They will successfully testify on his behalf and guarantee that the lover, if he gets a bad streak of luck, will not be able to deny the law. The Eidim are going to be subject to all this interrogation. The answer is we're going to drop the requirement of interrogation. Let's just read the Gemara inside. The other Rabbi Chanina Dvar Torah on a Torah level, Echad Dini Mominos, the Echad Dini Nefashos Bidrisha Ubechakira. The Torah requires Drisha Bechakira to interrogate the Eidim both in capital cases and in monetary cases as well. Shenemar. Again, here it's Kedai to open up the Chumash. If somebody could do that for me, I'd appreciate it. To Vayikra Chav Dalid. And there it says, Umake Behema Yishalmena. Umake Adam Yumas. So we're talking about both monetary cases, which is called Make Behema Yishalmena, as well as a capital case, which is called Make Adam Yumas. And then the pasuk says Mishpat Echad Yielohem, which means the Torah is equating Dini Mominus and Dini Nefashos. Whatever the requirements are in a case, in a litigation of Dini Nefashos, they apply equally to Dini Mominus. And therefore, since the Torah requires Drisha V'Chakira in the case of Dini Nefashos, and that's derived from a pasuk in Dvarim. Again, the pasuk we're looking at now is in Parshas Emor. Am I correct? Vayikra Chavdal is the end of Emor. Chav Aleph, Chav Beis. Does it say Makeh Behem Yishalmena Makeh Adam Yumas? And then it says Meshpar Echad Yilachem. Right? Is that that's the parsha of what's his name? The not the Mekoshes Shetzim, the other guy. What's the Makalel? No.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the Torah says Meshpar Echad Yilachem. Now, again, fast forward for a moment to Dvarim, Perek Yud Gimel, Parshas Rei, and therefore it says in Pasuk Tesvav, it says V'darashta V'chakarta V'shalta Heitev, and that's going to be the source from which we derive Drisha V'chakira. Then the Torah requires that we interrogate the Eidim on the highest level, you know, put them over the ringer. And now Mishpat Echad Yilachem means that even in Dini Mominus we require Drisha V'chakira. Umatam Omru. Here we have to say Omru Chachamim. I'll add that word. We're going to lift the requirement of drisha v'chakira in monetary cases. Kedesh lo tinol delis mifnei lovin. Lovin means the malve. Don't get confused here, because it looks like the plural of the word love. But what it really means is that we're not going to lock out the lovim, because we're going to encourage the malvim to extend the loan with the security that their eidim will testify successfully on their behalf. So the lovim will be able to convince the malvim and calm him down about extending the loan, because we've dropped the requirement of drisha v'chakira. Oh, wait a minute. Are you telling me that the Rabbanan have the authority to lower the requirements and drop the requirements that the Torah imposed upon Dine Mominos? You know what? Then we're going to drop the requirements of Mumchim. Because we're holding now that Erev Parshas Sivbahu, and therefore whatever it says in the Parshas Gzela will apply to the case of Halvav loans. And just like in Gzela the Torah requires Mumchim, it will require Mumchim for Halvos and Odos, but the Rabbanan will alleviate that requirement. They will rely on regular judges who are not Mumchim and don't have Smicha, because of Shalotin Odelis Bifnei Lovin. Because you imagine, you're coming to me for a loan, right? Shimon is asking Reuven for a loan. So Reuven now is very nervous, because if there's going to be a court case about this loan, in event that the Lovin denies the loan, then he has to show up in front of a Beis Din. Yeah, well, what kind of Beis Din does he have to get a hold of? Well, the Torah requires Mumchim. You know, Mumchim don't come a dime a dozen. They're quite rare. Ooh, right? So how am I going to get a Beis Din of Mumchim to decide this case? You know, maybe there's a backlog. Maybe there are no Mumchim to be had in this area. You know, we have to travel all the way to who knows where. So this is going to make it very difficult for the Malva to collect his money, because he can't even convene a Beis Din of Mumchim. So once again, we're going to drop the ball here. We're going to lower the requirements of Beis Din, and we're going to say all we need is three judges, and they don't have to be Mumchim. So again, here's the equation. We're going to drop the requirement of Drisha B'Chaktir and Edim, and that we saw from Chanina, and now we're going to drop the requirement of Mumchim, and all this is Kenei Shalotin Odelis B'Fnei Lofim.
Okay? Would having a star forestall the situation, or are the Edim going on the star that we're talking about?
Okay, so for shtar, you have to know a sugya in Masech the Ksuvus. A shtar is also quite complicated. It requires another pair of Edim, believe it or not. And that's called Edei Kiyum. So it means that if there are two John Hancock, you know, two signatures on the shtar, you're going to have to have, again, machlokis, whether one aid can testify in each one. You know, you could have one aid on this signature and another one aid on the other. But I think we pass like Rebbe, you need two Edim on each one of the signatures to verify the signatures. So even a shtar is not, you know, it's not God's gift to the world. It's also complicated. But the Gemara feels that if we can accept two takanos, the Rabbanon, that drop two requirements of the Torah, we can calm down the malva, and therefore we can expand the possibility that the lova will succeed in receiving a loan. What are these two requirements that we're going to drop? Number one, we're going to drop the requirement of Drisha V'Chakira in terms of the investigation of the Edim. And number two, we're going to drop the requirement of Mumchim. And again, even though we're holding Erev Parshas Ksivbem, and therefore the Parsha of Mumchim Elohim three times applies even to Alvaki Kesef Talvis Ami, nevertheless, the Rabbanan are going to lift that requirement. I'm looking for a better word. The Rabbanan are going to neutralize that requirement. And even if the Dayanim are not Mumchim, we can allow them to decide the case.
Even in the cases of Gonzales.
No. Again, right?
We're talking about Alalos.
Right. Lotin Odelis Bifnei Lovin right now applies only to Halvos and not to Gzelus. Now, it's interesting that you mention that, because there is a footnote here about Gzela. Let me see if I can find it. Where's the cover? Oh, here it is. Okay. What's the deal with Gzela here? Let's just see if I can find. If I don't find this, then we'll go on. I don't want to waste your time and mine just looking for this like a needle in a haystack. Kaimanship is Erev Parshios, Gilsa Torah, Shekol Mashin Emer Bazen Emer Bazer. And therefore, we're going to require not only three judges, we require three Mumchim. But if you hold any Erev Parshios Ksivko, we don't have a source in the Torah to require three judges at Mumchim. The question is whether we require Drish V'Chakir in Odos V'Alvos V'Yold Ein Erev Parshas, and the answer is, well, Drish V'Chakir is derived from a different parasha, and that is Mishpat Echad Yelachem. Okay, so that we discussed, but where was this discussion that I saw? Oh, says Van V'Af B'Shar Dini Momashen. Oh, here's the case. And this is going to come up in Tosis Divrei Maskil Ella. Okay, let's see. Okay, I don't see it right now, but let me tell you what he says here in the name of Tosis. shtei deos. There are two opinions about drisha v'chakira in the case of gzela. So watch what happens. Reuven accuses Shimon of stealing, of theft. Correct? And now Reuven invites two witnesses into the court to testify that Shimon stole money from him. Do we require drisha v'chakira? So Tosfos says there are two opinions on this. One opinion says that we that when in that according to Rabbi Chanina, it says Dvar Torah Echad Dini Mamnei Sakhdin Fon Shvish V'Chakira Umatam Omru. Now look at the language. Matam Omru B'Dinei Mamnos Lo B'Ino Shvish V'Chakira. It doesn't say Umatam Omru B'Dinei Halvos Lo B'Ino Shvish V'Chakira. So one opinion in the Rishonim, Tosfos quotes, is that even in the case of a gzela, of a testimony in a gzela case, we would not require drisha v'chakira. And he says, "Kidei shelo tinol deles bifnei gazlonim." Now, what does that mean? Shelo tinol deles bifnei gazlonim. So he says, "Bir betosis harush." The right, these are the extra tosis in of other rishonim. Kidesha Odomo Yasa Ovel Lahafsid Chavero. Right, a person will cause some sort of loss to his friend, you know, steal his money, swindle his money. The Yisvo Chalkach Shep Yifsalu Ha'edim Bedris of Chakiras. And the Bezdin will eventually disqualify the Edim with all these interrogations. So this is going to encourage people to steal things because they'll get away with it. So kidei, oh, here's the language. Kidei linol delos b'fnei gazlon, not shalotinol delos b'fnei alovin. Kidei linol delos b'fnei gazlon. Now we want to make it easier for the Adam to testify against someone who's guilty of theft, and we're going to drop the requirement of drishas v'chakiras in the case of gazlon. Was that your question?
Somewhere. Well, no.
No, that wasn't your question?
I mean,
so what was your question? I thought that was your question.
I just want to say that we're setting aside, and we're simply talking about loans and admissions rather than gazelles.
So as far as drisha v'chakira, there is such an opinion that we're only talking exclusively about halvos and odos, but Tosfos quotes an opinion that we have a principle called kidei linol delos b'fnei gazlonim. We want to close the gates in front of the gazlonim. We want to discourage them from causing losses to other people by telling them that there will be testimony against them, and that testimony will survive the slings and arrows of Beis Din because we're going to drop the requirements of drisha v'chakir.
It works the opposite way.
Yeah. Interesting, no? So that's what I found here in the in this footnote, and we're up to Elamei Atah. Okay, then. So we're now on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, and we're up to line 4, Elamei Atah. Now, in order to appreciate Elamei Atah, as I always tell you, gentlemen, we have to know everything to know anything. We have to know a sugya, which is 30 blot later on Daf Lamed Gimel. Now I'm only mentioning Daf Lamed Gimel because it's not yet Shkia. After Shkia, I wouldn't tell you it's on Daf Lamed Gimel. nobody caught that joke? Or did you
catch it? Yeah, I think that's last
night. So since it's still the day of Lamed Beis, I can tell you it's on page Lamed Gimel. Alright. So what does it say on Daf Lamed Gimel? So it says that there's a concept called Rishus Beis Din. Okay? Let's see if we can understand. This is on a very superficial level because I don't know the lumdus here, the deeper meaning of this concept. But on a superficial level, we have a concept called Rishus Beis Din. What does that mean, Rishus Beis Din? You know, the Torah is a transmission of Torah from generation to generation. And the leaders of each generation have to guarantee the judges and the courts, and that's part of the power that's and the authority that's invested in the Sanhedrin over the course of time. they will allow certain individuals to serve as judges. Now again, I'm not sure that that means that every single judge has to, you know, qualify and get, you know, get his document of qualification in front of the High Court of Israel. I don't know that that's so. But there's an assumption that if a person passes certain exams and he has he has mastered a certain amount of knowledge, then he has what's called Rishus Bezdin. That means he has the green light to go ahead and judge cases in Israel. What is the significance? What is the repercussion, the implication of Rishus Bezdin? And here we get into a very, very complicated sugya, which I don't know beans about, and that's called Tos. Tos means that the judges made an error. And the issue is, if they made an error in judgment, do they have to pay for that? Is that called a mazik? You know, the Torah says that if you cause a loss to your friend, a monetary loss, you have to pay compensation. What about a judge?
For this specific type of judges, deputized interim judge. Well,
so I like that word, deputized. If he has Rishus Bezdin and he's deputized, then he doesn't have to pay damages. The very fact that we have deputized him and recognized him and given him license to adjudicate with an A, right? To adjudicate, that itself exonerates him from any monetary compensation in the event that he makes an error. So the Gemara says, "Elo ameata." Everybody, look on line 4. Is tohu lo yishalm? If you're telling me that in the light of what we saw in Rabbi Chanina, that the Rabbanon changed the rules of the game and they dropped the requirements of the Torah. Again, Rabbi Chanina was addressing the question of Drisha v'Chakira, but now we're addressing the question of Mumchim, and we're holding now Erev Parashios Ksiv, and therefore in Halvos we require Mumchim. Came along the Chacham, they made an enactment that we're going to drop the requirement of mumchim, and in effect we're going to deputize judges who are not absolute mumchim. They don't have smicha. And we're going to say, well, they have enough knowledge to judge the case. And therefore we're going to deputize them and recognize them, give them license, the green light to go ahead and judge. Is then we don't understand the sugya on Daf Lamed Gimel, which postulates that unless you're a mumchim, you will have to pay in effect, in event that you made a mistake. Again, what exactly was that mistake is the most profound question, which I can't even address. Did they make an obvious mistake, a bold error? Did they cause a little bit of mistake, a little bit of a loss, a big loss? Do they not know a Mishnah? Do they not know a Gemara? Do they not know a Shach or a Taz? Like, well, what exactly is an error? But in any event, the premise is, in general sense, is that if you have Rishus Bezdin to judge and sit on a court, then you are exonerated from any sort of payment of damages in the case of error. But yet, the Gemara says that on Daf Lamed Gimel, that only Mumchim are exonerated from error, from paying in the case of error. Well, now, if you're telling me that they made the Chachomim lowered their guard and they allowed any expert, even if he's not a mumcha, to sit on a court, so then in effect we have a Rishus Bezdin, we've deputized even a hedgehog, a non-mumcha, to adjudicate, and then he should be likewise exempt from payment. So the Gemara answers, Kol Shkein Atanoel Deles Bifnei Lovin. The whole thrust of the takon of our Mishnah to drop the requirement of mumchim was in order to facilitate and calm down the malvus so that he doesn't have to think, well, how am I going to get a bezdin? I can't convene a bezdin of mumchim. So we're going to make it easier for him. Well, you know what? If our whole purpose is to calm down the malvus and make it easier for him, we don't want to say that the judges are going to be exempt from payment and penalty in event that they made a mistake. That's also going to inhibit the malva. Why? Because the malva is going to say, well, Okay, they're gonna appoint three judges. Okay, it's great news that I don't have to find a Bezdin of Mumchim, because that's gonna drive me up the wall, you know, to find a Bezdin of Mumchim. So you've made it a lot easier and a lot more accessible by saying that we don't require Mumchim. But on the other hand, he's gonna say, well, if you're not requiring Mumchim, and you get a bunch of ordinary people, pardon the expression, right, and they're gonna serve on this Bezdin, what's gonna be if they make a mistake? I have a claim against the lover, right? I'm the plaintiff, and now the Bezdin is going to make an error. Well, what kind of Bezdin am I dealing with? You know, I'm dealing with a second-rate court, and then they're telling the court, you know, the judges that they don't have to read the law books. You remember the picture that they always show on television? You know, the judges in their chambers. You know, they have all these. You know, sometimes you think there's nothing inside the covers. You know, it's just there for aesthetic purposes, right? But let's assume there are all those books of law. So why should the judge make the effort of reading what's in the law books? Right, going through Shulchan Aruch to find out the dinim, if he's going to be exonerated from payment anyway. So the Malchus again is out in the lurch. He's not guaranteed that he'll be able to successfully get his money back. So in order to guarantee that the law will be with him, first of all, you have to calm him down about finding a bezdin, convening a bezdin of you know, if you require mumchin, that's very difficult to find. But even after that, if you're going to drop the requirement of mumchin and then say, well, then now we're going to give a rishus bezdin to deputize any run-of-the-mill guy, you know, or a citizen off the street, and he's not even, the citizen is not nervous about the judgment because he has nothing to lose. What does he care? You know, he likes the lover's nose, so he's going to let him off the hook, or he feels compassion for the lover. After all, the Malva's a rich guy, you know, so, you know, we always want to protect the palace, the underdogs, right? They, you know, have all these liberals, so we're going to protect the position of the lover. And as a result, the Malva's out in the cold. So therefore, it doesn't make sense that we're going to give reshus to a non-mumche to sit as a judge, and then we're going to tell him that he doesn't have to learn the laws of the books, because no matter what mistake he makes, he's going to be off the hook. He doesn't have to pay damages. Now the Gemara asks, Ihachi, if you're telling me that Erev Parshas Ksiv, and therefore all the requirements that apply to Gzela, Elohim, 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 apply to Hodos as well. Just we're going to drop, through this Takana, we're going to drop the requirement of Mumchim, but we're going to still maintain that we require three judges, that's for sure. Is then Tarte Ktani. We can go back to the Mishnah now, and we don't have to apply the rule of Rabbi Avo. You remember the rule of Rabbi Avo? Shehen. Right? What was it called again? Let's go over it again. Mahen. Right? The Mahen. Leave out the Mahen. Why not read the Mishnah the following? Tartik Tani. The Mishnah is addressing two categories that have fundamentally different dinim and different requirements. Dinim Amenis Bishlosha means even if they're not Mumchim, they are hedyotos, they're rank and file citizens. And then we get to Gzeilus v'chavos v'shlosha, we're talking about Mumchim. So in that case, we've completely sideswiped the requirement of Rabbi Avo to add the Mahen. Do you follow what the Gemara is bothered by? The Gemara is saying, if you would tell me that you reject Erev Parshios, and therefore Dini Mominus doesn't require three judges, so then I understand that we need this miut, because the mission, or the thrust of the mission, is to tell me that you only require three judges in the case of gzeilus v'chavos. But now that you're telling me, no, we require three judges in all monetary cases, even in halvos and odos. The only difference as far as the requirement of mumchin are concerned, because we're holding erev parshios ksuv. If that be the case, then Rabbi Avo's interpretation of the Mishnah is totally unnecessary. Why not just say dinim amenis b'shlosha? That's one kind of shlosha, and gzeilus v'chavos b'shlosha, that's a different kind of shlosha. The shlosha for dinim amenis, i.e., for hodos and alvos, is what? Hedyotos. And the shlosha as far as gzeilus v'chavos is mumchim. The Odin. Furthermore, I'll tell you what bothers me. If gzeilus v'chavos b'shlosha is limiting the original Dini Mamonis Bishlosha, the opening line, is Shlosha Shlosha Lamali. The Mishnah is particularly ambiguous here. It says Dini Mamonis Bishlosha, and then it says Gzeilos V'Chavolos Bishlosha. Why not just drop the word Shlosha and say Dini Mamonos Kama Gzeilos V'Chavolos Bishlosha? The very fact that it says Shlosha Shlosha indicates that there are two separate paragraphs here in the Mishnah, two separate sections in the Mishnah. One is Dini Mamonis Bishlosha, and the other is Chavolos Gzeilos V'Chavolos Bishlosha. Elama Rava, Rava now offers an alternative interpretation of Mishnah to replace that of Rabbi Avo. Tarti Kitani. The Mishnah is teaching us two different dinim. It's not that the second din is a qualification and a limitation of the first din, as Rabbi Avo would have it, but there are two different dinim. And therefore it means that Dini Mamonis Bishlosha is a reference to Hodos Valvos, and here we accept Hedyotos. And then you have a second din of Gzeilos V'Chavolos Bishlosha, which is a reference to Shlosha Mumchim, Mishum de Rabbi Hanina, based on the law of Rabbi Hanina, that in Dini Mamonis we drop the requirement of Drish V'Chakira, and that's the principle of Shalotin Odelis Bifnei Lovin, and for the same reason we're going to drop the requirement of Mumchim, and in the case of Dini Mamonis of Halvos, we're only going to require Shlosha Hedyotos. Rav Acha Bereid Rav Ikam Amar Midaraisa Chad Nami Kosher. He completely rejects the principle of Eruv Parshios Ksiv. So if it says Elohim, 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 that's only as far as Gzelos, has no implication as far as Hodos and Alvos. All you need is one single judge. Shenemar, and I'll prove it to you, he says. The Pasuk says, Betzedek Tishpot Amisecha. Tishpot is Lashon Yachid, right? It's in the grammatical singular. So we're addressing one judge. And all we need is one judge. Ella, but the Chachamim made a gzera. We're afraid to rely on one judge. Why? Mishum Yoshvei Kronos. The three levels of Jews. Jews fit into three categories, three groups. The highest group on the level of Chachma is the group of Mumchim. The lowest level are the Yoshvei Kronos, right? Yaakov, what did you call them? Yoshvei Kronos. He had a fancy English word for that, right? The corner sitters or something?
Yeah, corner dwellers.
Corner dwellers, right. These are the guys who sit around, and they're total ignoramuses. They don't spend any time in any intellectual pursuits, and they sit on the corners, on the railings, you know, and they schmooze away. And in the middle,
on their, you know, those corporate sites, they're saying, alms for the poor, whatever, they'll say, lawyers for renters.
Okay, and in the middle, between these two extremes, we have your rank and file citizen. Those are called the Edyotos. They are scholars, you know, they study the Torah. They're not experts, they haven't been ordained. Now, here's the deal. If we're going to rely on the Torah law, which accepts and validates one single judge, well, you know what? It could be that this judge is a total ignoramus. He's one of the Yoshvei Kronos. That's not a way of fulfilling tzedek tirdof, that we should have judgment. They have no knowledge of the law. So the Gemara says, "Otu b'tlosu milo Yoshvei Kronos." So what are you going to do? You're going to jack up the requirement. The Torah says one judge is enough. Alvos. And the Rabban are going to say we're going to require three judges. Maybe all three judges will be Yoshvei Kronos. So the Gemara answers, "The Efshar de Lesbu Chad de Gomer." It's impossible that there wouldn't be one of the three who learnt the laws. You know, if once you multiply your requirement from one to three, then we assume that one of them will have studied the law. You know, and he'll be the dominant judge on the court. Then the others will be sort of nachshlep, as they'll follow what he says. So now you're telling me that as far as Torah law is concerned, you don't require mumchim, and the Torah gave permission and deputized even a hedgehog to give judgment. Is Torah lo yishalmu? We're back to square one as far as the Gemara Daf Lamed Gimel, which insists that if a hedgehog makes an error in judgment, he has to pay compensation. He doesn't have rishus bezdin. What do you mean he doesn't have rishus bezdin? The Torah says in the case of Alvos, all you need is one judge. And if he and this judge doesn't have to be a mumcha because we're not holding Erev Parshios. So the Gemara answers, that kol shkein d'nefisha yoshvei kronos. What's going to happen is you're creating a sociological phenomenon where the lowest of the low, these yoshvei kronos who are totally ignorant, are going to want to take up jobs as judges. Why? Because they have nothing to lose. And even if they make an error, an absolute error, a gross error in judgment, they still will have to pay. So we need to have some sort of latch, you know, some sort of restriction that will encourage the more scholarly members of the community to sit as judges. And therefore what we're going to tell them is that if you're a Yoshev Kronos, it's not worth your while. This is not a good idea for you, because you're going to make an error and you're going to have to pay for it. The Gemara says, "My Ika, what's the difference halacha l'maisa between Rav or Rav Acha b'Reid Rav Ika?" Now, both of them will require, in the case of halvos, that we have three judges, and they don't have to be hedyotos. The only difference is that Rav says that on a doraisa level, we need three judges because he accepts Erev Parshios. Rav Acha, on the other hand, only requires three judges on a rabbinic level. The Torah would have recognized one judge. But at the end of the day, bottom line is that everybody agrees that we require three judges. So what's the nafkamina? Gemara answers, Ika beinayu diomer Shmuel, shnayim shedonu dineim din, el shenikru bezdin chotzif. Shmuel says that if b'dieved, post facto, two judges adjudicated the case without a third judge, then we will recognize and validate that judgment. It's a binding judgment. Again, it's a bezdin chatzuf. We consider them mechutzafim because the rabbanim require three judges. Why didn't they add a third judge? But nevertheless, their din is a valid din. Well, that can't be according to Rava. Rava less laid the Shmuel. Rava cannot possibly accept that statement of Shmuel because Rava is of the opinion that the Torah requires three judges. Rava accepted the Erev Parshios Ksiv and the Elohim, Elohim times three in the Parsh of Gzela is now applicable to Alvos. Bola Rav Acha b'Reid Rav Ika, that he derived from the Pasuk B'Tzedek Tishpot Amisecha, that one judge is sufficient. Islay de Shmuel, he's going to accept Shmuel, that even though the Rabbanon jacked up the requirement from one judge to three judges, b'dieved, post facto, we're going to accept and validate the judgment of two judges. So that's where we are for today. And Amir Tzashem, tomorrow, if you're not up too late with the barbecue tonight, right? Then we'll start with Nezek v'chatzi Nezek, and I wish everyone a great day. Okay, thank you so much.